Time is now 9 o'clock, so I will open this Grand County Council's emergency meeting. The date is Wednesday, March 11th, 2020. Present are council members Fred Halliday, council member Jaylen Hawk, and the classes may be reachable by phone, and we need to speak to them. Curtis Wells will be here shortly, council member. Councilmember Gabriel Wojcik, Councilmember Lori Passman, Councilmember Danny McGann, County Attorney Christina Sloan, County Administrator Chris Baird, and Clerk Auditor Quinn Hall. I would open this meeting with the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for being here. We are facing a situation that this county, and I know this problem has not faced since dying flu. And it's been a very difficult week for the members of the council and the staff that have been working on this. There have not been any decisions made lightly. It's been a team effort, including the county council, the city council, the managers of both the entities and the health system. The meeting will run as set. We're going to begin by having our county administrator explain the ordinance and the process which and how it's come about. Then we will hear from our health professionals. Our health professionals will not be limited to the time they need to speak. After we heard from the health professionals, I will open it to general comments from the public. I ask you to keep your comments to 2 minutes or less. If someone has already stated what you have stated, please just tell us that you agree with a certain person. And I want everyone to respect everyone that's on the council, our staff, and everyone that is present there. We will treat you other than fidelity. Chris
Baird. Okay, so thank you all for coming. for the last couple of weeks, all of public safety, public health, local officials have been meeting and coordinating, trying to figure out how to respond to the spread of coronavirus. There's been a lot of back and forth among all involved about how we should respond. At the current time and given the current situation, we've decided on this particular order. I want to make it clear that we have not decided to cancel events at this time. And this order is going to impose a temporary restriction on mass gatherings. That restriction will be 250 or more people in outdoor venues or 100 people or more in indoor venues and in single venues. And that's for a duration of 30 days, not extended. Additionally, we're going to require that all events comply with the guidelines and recommendations that the CDC has provided for large events. So that's the gist of this order. And the rationale for this is that it's been shown that social distancing is the most effective way to slow down the spread of the virus. We know that the virus is going to get to Grand County. This is not an attempt to stop it from getting to Grand County. This is an attempt to slow it down so that our healthcare system does not become overwhelmed. What we're seeing across the world right now is that people are dying, not because they caught coronavirus, but because they do not have access to the healthcare necessary to keep them alive. That's the situation we're trying to mitigate here. We're not under the thought that we're going to stop coronavirus from getting to Grand County. We're trying to slow it down using the best available practices that have been proven to slow it down. And with that, I would like to invite O'Ryan and Brady from our health department to speak to their position on this issue.
Council members, thank you for inviting us to the table. Yes, my name is Braden Bradford. I'm the health officer for the Southeast Utah Health Department that covers Carbon, Emory, and Grand County.
And I'm O'Ryan Rogers. I'm the environmental health director for the Southeast Utah Health Department over Carbon, Emory, and Grand County.
The chair alluded to a little bit, and in discussions that we've had with the task force and various agencies that over the last couple of weeks, there is not an easy answer to the problem that faces us right now. And that is, as we well understand, balancing the needs of a community that has a lot of events planned coming up with what is spreading throughout now the United States, a disease that we don't fully understand yet. It's that new. We do understand elements of the disease, as Chris Baird has mentioned. We understand that if we take proper precautions by distancing ourselves, by staying home when we are sick, and if there is access to adequate medical care, we can end up with mostly good outcomes with this disease. When the situation becomes such that individuals don't receive the care they need, or they are in a situation where, because we do know the disease is very infectious, the average person that has the disease infects 2.5 other people, up to 4 other people. We feel the need to support the county in this action with this order too, and we do feel like it strikes a balance between allowing events to continue while highlighting the need to put in place stipulations that will increase social distancing, that will make people aware that we want to do what we can to avoid large congregated crowds. We fully anticipate that we will have cases of coronavirus in our communities, and we anticipate being ready for those. What What we are striving to do is to have those cases come in a manner that is spread out so that our healthcare workers, public health responders, can respond adequately to each of those cases. And isolate those cases, investigate where they've been, be in touch with those people that have been in contact with those cases, give them the proper instructions as well.
I think it's also important to emphasize that although these restrictions may be put into place, we are still members of this community. We're still partners with all of the event organizers and everybody that can be affected by this. We're still your partners. We want to work with you. We want to come up with solutions that benefit everybody while still mitigating the risks of this disease. Okay. Ryan was just mentioning that we want to remain as partners.
I will say that I'll add that not only, there's of course the task force and other partners that have been involved in these conversations. I'm in basically daily contact with task force that is heading up this response for the state of Utah, other health officers. I want to emphasize that this is a process that is fluid and changing, and right now we know that if we don't take proactive action, that will set us up to be subject to increased disease transmission rate in the county. As I mentioned, so we anticipate that it will be here. As part of those meetings, we are preparing further recommendations for businesses, for schools, we're going to continue to address the issue of mass gathering events, as those will begin to happen throughout the country. But Grand County is in a very unique situation geographically, to have such a high demand on the natural resources here, and yet our public health and healthcare infrastructure is built for a town that doesn't have tens of thousands of people living here year round. And we do anticipate that a wave, if we were to have that wave, it would overwhelm our capabilities as a health department. I won't speak to the hospital yet. For those folks that are in the hall, I want to re-emphasize what I was saying before, and that we are members of this community, we are partners with this community, we want to partner with everybody to help come up with creative solutions to still allow them to occur, but limit these mass gatherings. And these decisions aren't being made lightly. We'd be speaking of this task force and somewhat outdated language in this proposed order, but we are working with the sheriff's office, we are working with the North Police Department, we're working with NKMS, the hospital, fire department, all of our first responders, and identifying what limitations each of them have and how we can better support each other as a team. So now I'll just end by saying that when we do have that first positive case, that is not going to be cause for panic. We have processes in place to deal with that situation, just want to emphasize that the council members and the public that if we can deal with this a little bit at a time, as this proposal would allow us to do, we are fully confident that we could handle that as this disease enters our community.
Lastly, on my end, I think that we have a large audience here, and it's important for us to emphasize that, along with you all being our partner, we need to have everybody out there getting their flu shots. We need to practice social distancing, which we're certainly not going to answer at any moment. People will be washing their hands and reaching out to organizations that provide scientific information about the disease. And we are doing flu shots at the health department. Flu shots do not protect you against coronavirus, but protect you against another disease that's also a big issue. But they have similar symptoms. So if you get your flu shot, maybe it will protect you from having symptoms that may make you fear that you have coronavirus. That's all I have.
Council,
do you
have
any questions?
Yes.
Do you have any way to test for coronavirus at this point?
Yes, there is a test. A lot of us are used to, if we've had those flu symptoms and then to our healthcare provider, we're used to a rapid test where we have results very quickly. Right now, that test is shipped off to one of the three labs in Utah that can process it. We anticipate, at least for now, having results within 24 hours of them receiving that test. Orion mentioned the flu. The symptoms are very similar. And as of right now, the tests are running through the Utah State Public Health Lab. We recognize there have been two positive cases, but everything else has been negative. Those samples have been justified by travel history or symptoms that wouldn't be explained otherwise.
Any other questions? Thank you so very much.
As I explained, one of our greatest fears is that the healthcare system will become overwhelmed, and the demand for life-saving healthcare services will be exceeded. And so I invited Jen Sadoff and her chief medical officer, Dylan Cole, to speak to this issue, and I invite them up now.
Over here? Yeah, because they can't unable to hear from the table.
We'll introduce
yourself.
Hi, I'm Jen Sadoff. I'm a CEO at my regional hospital, and I'm here with our chief medical officer, Dr. Dylan Cole. We have been partnering very closely with the health department all throughout the last month on creating responses at Milan Regional Hospital and making sure that we're prepared. Starting today, access to the hospital will be limited to two doors so that we can screen patients upon entry. We've already had a couple of scares where patients with respiratory symptoms have made it all the way to, face-to-face with the doctor. And then that physician has to be quarantined for 14 days or until we get a negative test back. Luckily, we have all of our tests so far have come back negative. So it's definitely not an easy decision that you have to make. I am really glad it's a decision that you are making and not me. We are worrying about being ready and prepared to take care of the community. And we believe that the health department is the best leader in terms of what the course of action is to do that. We wanted to give you a little bit of an idea of the resources that we have available. a lot of people, I think, imagine a hospital looking like what you see on TV, and it's really not that way in a rural hospital. Dr. Cole and I were on the phone until about 1 a.m. last night looking for statistics on how many patients, percentage of patients who will need ventilators, ICUs, and it's important for you to know that we don't have an ICU here in Moab. The nearest ICU is over in Grand Junction. Except for them, they have about 25 ventilators, so there may not be in use at the time. So I'm talking with Internet Healthcare and the University of Utah. It sounds like we have somewhere between 300 to 400 ventilators in all of the state. So it's really early. We don't know what the map will look like, but looking at other places around the globe who are experiencing it, it's very scary from a hospital and healthcare perspective, and I think we all feel some anxiety while also feeling optimistic about, you know, our team and working together. There's been massive supply chain disruptions. We don't have enough masks for our healthcare workers to change masks in between every patient. They're having to save their masks. We can't get more masks. And that's important to know because it's a very concerning situation for us. We have 100 tappers, which is the best practice if we do have a patient who tests positive for COVID-19. We can't even do trainings with our people right now on how to put those tappers on and off because we can't afford to waste them. So we're doing one training with all of our nurses tonight with one tapper. You know, I think our room availability, because this is still considered airborne, we have a total of 6 rooms in the whole hospital that we negative pressure room. One of those is an OB room, so we probably won't convert that unless we really need to. We have 2 in the emergency room, 2 on a med-surg unit, one of which is full right now, and what we call a decon or isolation room. And then, as I might have said already, I can't quite remember, we don't keep patients in the ventilators at a hospital. Now, as we go down the road, and, you know, we will cross bridges when we need to cross as we come to them, we do have 3 ventilators that we use prior to a transplant patient, but typically, we don't keep patients in the ventilator. And it does look like, although most people get well, the people who do need hospitalization, you know, the percentages are all over the board, but a lot of them do need a ventilator.
Dr. Cole is really the expert, so turn it over to him. I said you've got a few comments there about Tokyo. Jim mentioned that we have to go and call the town physician and the hospital. And I'm a member of the Moab Regional Hospital Medical Staff and the Medical Officer. And I just have a few comments to add, and I'm happy to help with, you know, any questions and any capacity that I can. But first point I want to make is that I'm a clinician, I'm a family physician, I'm not a public health expert. I do think it's important that we turn to and we follow the guidance of our epidemiologists and public health experts, which include the Department of Health as well as CDC. This virus is novel, and in many ways we don't know yet how it behaves. A lot of the preliminary data are based on studies done in China, and this is all evolving over the course of months rather than in many cases we have years and years to gather data and see how a disease process will evolve. However, we do know that there are other respiratory viral pathogens, influenza being one of the most studied, that we can look to help to understand some of the characteristics of how this might spread through a community and potentially in a pandemic situation. The guidance and the studies are very well understood by the CDC, and I would just emphasize that that those include both personal, so number one,
as has previously been stated, and I fully agree, we're past the point of containment. That's no longer the goal. This isn't an issue of preventing it from arriving here in Grand Canyon. This is an issue of mitigating. There is a graphic circulating through social media and other sites now at this time, which is actually taken, adopted from a task force statement from the CDC in 2017 that describes what mitigation strategies look like and what effect they can have. And that's where that phrase of flattening the curve has come from. And if the viral pathogens like this spread it without any steps towards mitigation, oftentimes we will see a much steeper incline and a higher total amount of morbidity and mortality that can overwhelm any local or regional healthcare resource network. Our goal in these cases is to flatten the curve, is to spread that out, lower the peak, and attempt to try to maintain that under a level that can be dealt with more effectively with local and regional resources. So that said, those steps include things that we all can do and that are being heavily emphasized in terms of personal non-pharmacologic interventions, things like hand washing, respiratory hygiene, self-isolation, if you feel like you said. In cases of pandemic, we often will add to that self-quarantine for people who may have been in contact with an infected person. But there is a limit to what those personal mitigation strategies can accomplish if it's not also accompanied by community-wide mitigation strategies. Those include things like what's being proposed in terms of social distancing strategies. I will add, and we're not having this conversation today, that those sometimes include other steps for social mitigation strategies in terms of school closures and that are being pursued now around the country and around the world. From many previous instances, including the 1918-1919 influenza, Spanish flu, and other similar influenza outbreaks that have happened since, we know that starting those strategies early, before the illness is in wide circulation in the community, is the only way for those to be effective. So the difficulty here is in having to make a decision without having all of the information at a time when the intervention is so effective.
Thank you for being here. So as part of this order, section 2A4.
Starts the outline, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Starts the outline, section 2A4, the order outlines preventative supplies that are required for events, per CDC guidelines. And I guess for context, so a lot of businesses now, they can't get toilet paper, they can't get hand sanitizer, they can't find it online anywhere, they can't find it at Sam's Club or anything, it's not available. And so if and some of the events that have been canceled so far, they're communicating that this is one reason why they decided to cancel the event, because they're essentially placing requirements on them that they can't fill. And so I'm wondering if does the hospital have like stockpiles of hand sanitizers or some of the preventative supplies that are being required for events, but that they can't find online or off the shelf?
We order ours through a pretty large CCO. So our hand sanitizers, we do have those pump kinds, but most of ours are like mounted on a wall, refilled. One of the reasons why we shut our door lids down to 2 door lids is that people are coming in and stealing our boxes of masks. We only have enough masks right now to put on patients for every scheduled patient that we have in the month. it's pretty critical situation. Our CTO has allocated to 5-4 hospitals. Everybody can get their allocation, but we're going to have to wait until those show up. So we're thinking about things like using children's masks on people with small faces. So we don't have them for you, but we also are held to a higher standard than what you might be able to find, you know, at a local hardware store or something here, but maybe online. So I really can't answer that because I doubt there's a standard in the resolution for, you know, what kind of mask we need to use.
So we did discuss this, and the latter part of that paragraph reads, as the term has been approved by the task force, and that's in relation to the temperature issues. The task force will have to evaluate the level of risk that this event will be taken on if it's conducted without proper sanitization equipment. And so that's something that the task force is going to have to evaluate and put in the temperature. One of the biggest issues that we're having is that we know that we need to mitigate the risk associated with that, but we don't necessarily have the resources to do that. And so, in some cases, we have to realize that if we allow events to proceed and they don't have the necessary mitigations in place to create an acceptable level of risk, that we are making that event. But again, it needs to be seriously considered, and the task force includes healthcare professionals and public safety professionals, and it will have to be evaluated whether or not if an event that we can't get masks. The masks are only for participants or staff who become ill, not for everybody, just those participants who may fall ill during the event.
So the hand sanitizer shortage is real now. Can't find a hand sanitizer online. Local businesses are looking for it. They can't find it. So, like, the first few events have been canceled. What was the communication like with them? Because if we're saying, hey, if that scenario occurs, we'll evaluate it. Well, that's where we're at today.
And so, I would probably defer to the authority of the health department in that case on our task force to make the determination whether or not the level of risk associated is acceptable. And there is potentially alternatives with health departments who are analyzing the cases, but I'm not going to make that call for them. And I think we have to realize that the health department is taking the lead on this. They are the ones who are going to really be calling most of the shots. And it's really at their recommendation that we put a lot of these the numbers associated with the on that gathering came from the health department, and the rest come straight from the webpage of recommendations from the Center for Disease Control.
Well, I have two more.
Yeah, their hand sanitizer is really hard to come by right now, but I have also reached out to two different chemical soil companies. They typically carry in-class supplies of hand washing stations that would be appropriate for use in these events. River Brothers has 18, and Waste and Water Logistics has 30 hand washing stations. They also have two essentially converted shipping containers that have both hot and cold running water with it are used on for fire. So there are some resources out there. And although hand sanitizer, we also like hand sanitizer, hand washing is far better than hand sanitizer.
So, question to you and my name now for a minute.
Sure.
So, how many of the counterparts? How many of the counterparts of yours throughout the state, other, you know, regional health departments are there?
There's a total of 13 health departments.
And are we the first and the only regional health department to establish prescriptions according to CDC guidelines for mass gatherings?
I'll answer that in the course of this discussion about
We have called an emergency board of health meeting to take place tomorrow to discuss a regulation that would, for all intents and purposes, echo what Grand County has proposed today with our recommendation that we could put in place for all of our counties. With that being said, right now we are the first to do this. I've reached out to everybody else, and we're going to continue that discussion today. We were particularly interested in some of the counties that experience tourism rates like Grand County does, like Summit County. Unfortunately, their tourism season right now is kind of in a dead zone. They're winding up steaming and Sundance, and they're gearing up for the summer right now. This is what they call their month season. But so they are not considering this at this time. But in mentioning the fact that we're going to approach our board for a vote on the regulations similar to this, their health officer thought that was a very good idea in case it were to come up. However, in taking into account all of the considerations, I'll refer back to the fact that even in Summit County, for example, they're right next to the Wasatch Front, whereas we are isolated here. And certainly there are people willing to come to our aid, but that would be limited by time and distance and what else is happening in the state.
Yesterday in our meeting, we discussed that all of the counties and this district most likely, and there's a high probability that they will be following our suit tomorrow and putting such a restriction into their county. They're also reaching out to San Juan County to do the same thing. So yes, we are the first, but I believe strongly that we will be followed by all of our surrounding counties.
I've been
in touch with
similarly, when they're interested in what we're doing and they want our red words, they want our documents, they want to be voted in and model, and that includes Washington County, Payne County, Harvard County, Southern County, and Sullivan County in particular. So, we're the first step in their perspective of what we're talking about.
I just want to iterate, it may be the first to use that, but we're far from the first in the United States. Many across the United States. And Dr. Cole indicated your opportunity to have the greatest impact on slowing the virus down is in four communities of
rest.
Yes,
so I'm curious, I'll have everybody up here, and maybe we can answer this, but it seems like it's the health department. You speak of Chris at the end of the implementation plan. So what I'm wondering is, there is an exception in this document that accepts surgery, having a mask down. Having gone through church in this community for many years, I know that on Sunday, the churches are packed with tourists that have come in, worked in, and they want us to work with them before they leave town. So I'm just curious what the justification is, because in my mind, that's a more critical situation than some of the outdoor events where people are spread out.
I think that's a valid point. I'd like to think about that a little bit.
Well, I'm going to put that in there. I guess I'll say that the discussion has done everything from set everything down right away, you know, oh my God, and to business as usual. The point we're at right now is fairly conservative. Compared with what's happening around the world. And all I can say is that if the situation gets worse and it comes to the point where we have to take more aggressive action than the task force on the region we need to consider that. We're starting off on the more conservative side of action at this point. That's what all the exemptions that are in there will have to be in relation to the situation we're in right now. And but you're right, any mass gathering, no matter what it is going to carry the same risk. But it's my hope that our communities and our churches will assess the risk and make a call, a responsible call. And if they don't, then we'll have to address it. But it's my hope that this community will make responsible decisions for themselves.
I appreciate Chris's input there. One additional thing we consider is, though certainly there'll be an increase of attendees there from out of town, in both schools and churches, we do have a very good idea of who is there. Obviously not everybody, but as far as looking back epidemiologically, we feel like that's a pretty controlled situation, but would be up for a discussion should we determine that we're exposing ourselves a little bit more than we want to.
Yeah. And part of the element of resources that we have to deal with at this point in time anyway is that it's much more difficult to track an outbreak in an event situation where you have a lot of people from all over the world being in one location. A church, even though it will have some sort of, most of them won't be much to do to track, identify, notify, and get all the necessary action. But they have health department staff with to try to limit exposure in that situation. It's much, much more difficult in that gathering than that style of situation.
So
I think that I appreciate the proactiveness and the preparedness, and I think for context, some of the concerns that I have is if you look at this from high level, there's not been any travel restrictions imposed by the federal government. There's not been any driver or notice from state government to impose this restriction. If there's an agency at the state saying, I now have a phone call, so you call them up. Here's my perspective. Okay, sounds good. You guys did a good job. But to just rely on that and say, hey, they're behind the times of the trend, it's always different side of the story. And where that's coming from is to say that we're the first in the state, to impose restriction like this and really put a label on our forehead that Moab is not open for business, because that's what this does. And that's what that's beginning to do.
Is troubling because this is the economy, right? So for Washington County, Harden County, with all due respect, or for other rural counties in Utah to say we're going to restrict mass gatherings, that doesn't really have anywhere close to the impact to what this community is as well here. And so, you've got small business owners that have been doing their business over the winter months. You're ordering those pumps because they have no revenue. And now we're just getting into the beginning of the season, and they're seeing local government. And what a lot of people feel like is generally just an overreaction. And I take this seriously. When I have elderly in my family that live for 4 years and young too. But people do feel like this is an overreaction. A lot of people do. And so if you're willing to, what I would ask is just respect that small businesses will fail if these events continue to snowball and cancel. And people are starting to cancel already because they're reading, prepared for declaration of local emergency events at canceling. They don't read all the fine print. That's not the way it works. They're not going to go through these CDC guidelines and say, how does this work? They're going to read in the press, and they're going to read if their events have been canceled. They're going to go, no, I'm staying home.
And the impact that has on the economy is important because we do have this larger responsibility to provide revenue for these public services to do their job. And so I think what I'm asking for is just some balance and some caution.
I'd like to speak to that. So one aspect of this that has been mentioned so far is the task force, the incident command system structure has been implemented under a unified command with all of the players that I spoke of before. I am acting as the incident commander on that, under that we have our command staff made up of everybody else, and one side of that is a team of public information officers. We have public information officers from the health department, the city, the county, sheriff's office, all these others that have expertise in how to get public information to the public and to folks that are coming here. The economic impact is one of the biggest things we've talked about in this, and essentially the way that it was put is we need to figure out how to wrap this up with a nice bow to say we are open for business, but these are the precautions we're trying to take and protect both our visitors and our community.
The next people that are running the event have also asked to, as quickly as possible, let them know what they need to do so that they can tweak their event so that they can meet these requirements. That's why it wasn't set to start this weekend. But, you know, this weekend's events were allowed to continue just as they had originally been given the opportunity to do so. This does not start until Monday morning. If this passes, we will get this into the hands of all event organizers so that they can start doing what they need to prepare. So that's part of it, if we were responding to what the event operators were asking us. They wanted this in their hands as soon as possible.
The event operators is canceled?
No, it was all of them at one point. I know, so yes, that they asked us to give them the, what they had to do. The events this weekend were not required to do this.
I would like to clarify. So, I asked Elaine Gisler to send out a letter asking all of them to respond with a COVID-19 preparedness plan in relation to the CDC guidelines for mitigating risk at large gatherings. I did that, Elaine did that, all the event organizers received that request. And that's the minimum amount that I think that we should be doing. The mass gathering component was not mentioned at that time, wasn't conceived at that time, and so the mass gathering restriction, if you go into effect, it just passes on Monday. That was not a request in any way of the event holder. The basic guidelines from the CDC for managing risk at large events was requested of all event holders.
So yes, that's better clarification.
Okay.
And
they're
willing to ask
to do this. So, I mean, I think that basic preventative strategies, you know, if an event can comply with those, then it's really a dramatic risk. And I think that we all need to understand that we cannot allow our health care system to be overburdened. There are people in the community who depend on it, people with serious health conditions who depend on it. And if our hospital takes capacity and we have no ability to transport because all regional hospitals are also at capacity, that's a very serious risk. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure that our health care system does not become overburdened to the point where if you have a severe case of coronavirus, before you have a heart attack, or you have a stroke, or any other emergent need, or you have an accident, and we have a lot of emergent care needs from tourism industry that you need taken care of. That's what we're trying to ensure.
And in addition to that, we also have to recognize the first responders that may be coming into contact with these people, because first responders aren't, for lack of a better word, immune to these regulations or rules.
if the farmer goes in and does not, for some reason, have proper PPE, or for whatever reason, goes in and contacts the person with COVID-19, is the health department required to isolate them for 14 days or until they're proven not to be ill? And that takes them off the streets. That prevents them from protecting us.
The economic impact is something that we, elected officials and staff are taking very seriously, and our concern is that if the health care system is overwhelmed, if our law enforcement and public safety officials are quarantined, that the economic impact can be especially severe, if not much worse. So we're trying to take a balance, exactly about the disease, and to protect the community, and also our economic.
Well, thanks for holding the meeting. I wanted to be clear as I speak that I take this virus issue very seriously. I'm not coming before you to make the point that it's not important. It is very important. However, I want to bring up a few things that may be getting a little out of proportion. One of the things that I was hoping the doctor would still be here about is there was an omission in his remarks about the people that are really in danger. All of us watch TV. Unless you live under a bridge, you know what the issues are, and that those issues really affect people 70 years or older, or people with some kind of other health ailment that's a pre-existing condition. All those people should be self-quarantined at this point no matter what. If you are over 70, which I am, I shouldn't probably be here either. But I'm not afraid of the virus because I'm in good health. And so 90% of our population really isn't in very much danger. Maybe more than 90%. But we're enacting legislation that's affecting everybody when really 5 or 10% of the people are really in any kind of danger. And so as we make these rules, I think it's important that we keep that in perspective, that you're affecting a lot of people that really aren't in danger. And the other thing I'd like to say is while I think it's important to be vigilant, and maybe it is important to limit some groups, I don't think the size of the group is necessarily the most important thing. It's more the demographic of the group. The three groups that got canceled this weekend were probably in the top 5% of health. We had runners, we had bikers, and those people are younger. They're in a very safe demographic, including their families and the people that promote them. The chances of any one of those adding to our potential epidemic is really small. And so as a business community, we got kicked in the stomach yesterday. I hadn't had one single cancellation until yesterday. We were sold out. We were staffed up. We've spent the time and the money to get ready for this, and at the very last minute, we lost half of our occupancy, maybe more than half by the time I get back. So I know some of you are kind of anti-tourism in the first place, and so maybe that gives you some solace. But you need to know there are a lot of people in this community that are going to get laid off today. There's a lot of people in this community that are going to suffer economically. And so as you make these decisions that affect everybody, when only really 5 or 10% of the people are at risk, you have to think about the collateral damage that's happening. The collateral damage that's happening is tremendous, and it's happening on a national level. And I don't think our leaders are being completely clear with the population that this only affects 5% of the people. Most of the people that get it get the flu and then recover. So I urge you to use a little common sense as you do things that are hugely impactful to your business community. So I might end by saying, because of this, I'm going to serve without pay this year. I won't make any money this year. I'll lose money. Half of my crew isn't going to have a job this year. And so I'd expect that you guys share the pain. I'd expect that all of you serve without pay.
Yeah.
So,
you will not have that. If you cannot
control
yourself, I ask you to leave.
Okay, I'm just asking you to share the pain. I'm going to serve without pay. My business is going to lose a lot of money. I expect you guys to serve without pay, and I expect you to go back and look at your budget, and you need to draw a line through all non-essential items. That includes payroll for people, because what's going to happen is the collateral is going to go on. Our booming real estate business is going to very much deplete itself. It'll take a little while, but it's going downhill. You're only going to need half the building inspectors. You're not going to need all the people you have in your offices. So keep that in mind and show us real leadership and share the pain. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Come on. Oh, my God.
That benefits all. I know I'm young, I'm supposed to be healthy, but
It does affect some people.
And I just want to say, yeah, the health department, we are putting together additional guidance documents. We are going to be sending out information. We are a resource to our community on this. And so, you got my number.
So let me have a couple people approve, go through and you. So if you come up and stand up, then I'll know who comes in.
So my name is Justin Rich. I'm the event organizer for Madden's event, here in town. And I just want to start this off by just making a statement because I've been receiving lots of hate mail from the community. I want to start off by saying I am a member of this community. I've lived here for 3 years. I forced my brother to move here. His wife is a teacher at MCS. My daughter is a 5-time state champion. She's going to win another 3 this spring in track. I have donated thousands of dollars. I've donated shoes. I've donated clothes, bikes to the track team. I've hosted the races at the event in town. This doesn't also just affect the businesses, but they will, we donate a lot of money to youth groups and organizations here in town that are going to lose out. Now, we are going to do our part, and whether it puts us out of business or not, we are still going to donate to those groups, even though that they were not after the event, even though the event was canceled. So we are still going to get that money back. But I just want to give my side of the story and how I feel about the situation. So on Friday, I received an email from the travel council at 6 o'clock at night saying that we accept events in town if you do X, Y, and Z. I was the bluff this weekend in order to get away from all of the craziness that's about ready to happen to me over the next 2 weeks. This is very challenging for us as event organizers, and there's a lot of stress. So I went out of town and to be bombarded at 6 o'clock at night saying that this is an emergency. I totally understood what was going on. I purchased thousands of dollars. I got some of the last hand sanitizer. I got some of the last co-op wipes. I reached out to Brendan. He offered to give me the wipes that they use for the cart. We contacted the toilet companies. We typically have one hand wash station at the start of the half marathon. We included an additional one there at the start, one at the start of the 5 mile, and one at the finish. The finish line was also at Lions Park, and there were bathrooms and restrooms and maintenance facilities for them to wash their hands there. We also had Grandson EMS that was going to be running medical for us all weekend. There were going to be multiple ambulances on course. There was going to be trucks. There were going to be individuals on bikes. All runners were going to run past medical staff and professionals throughout the event. When I came in on Monday to discuss the issues with the travel council, Elaine said that Chris was going to be the one making the decision, that he was having a meeting. So I came into his office shortly after that and asked to speak with him. He said to me that he asked me what was I going to do make sure that everybody was safe. And when I responded that I hired medical professionals, so that's in town, that I hired them to do their job, his response was, well, no, I'm not asking what they're going to do, I'm asking what you're going to do to stop this problem. I continued to challenge him about his terms of using the word disease and the numbers that he was using and the beds that he had available. I challenged him on those numbers because I heard that we may have limited space, but so does everybody else in this community. Honestly, has as much or more access to healthcare than anybody else in a town like Salt Lake. He continued to be frustrated. At that point, he tapped on his desk and said, "You better knock on wood. You're not the one that brings this virus into our town. Because if you do, I don't know what could happen." And then he said to me that if event organizers continue to come into his office and continue to harass him, he will cancel events at death penalty. So I then walked over to the city office, and the city office did not have the same opinion. And the city building did not have the same opinion that the county did. They wanted to have organized events, and they wanted to continue forward. For me, when the entire staff decided to cancel, I felt the pressure. on as the event organizer, and I was receiving emails. I was being threatened by the council and how they were going to, if I was the one that brought this virus into this town, that I was going to be held accountable. I host 9 events in town. I bring millions and millions of dollars to town. If you look at my schedule, not only do we host events in town, they are in November, in 2 November, 1 in January, 1 in February, 2 in March. My info event I acquired, so I never started that one, and 1 in June. Our events and our impact on this economy is all in your shoulder, Jesus, when nobody else is here. And sure. And so if you're an organizer, I have no choice but to cancel my event because I felt threatened that my livelihood and my future events will go on to be at threat. And if you could look through this whole entire this pamphlet, the executive order, this is the first time I've seen it. As the event organizer, I asked for it yesterday. Elaine said that it has not been released to the public. This is the first time I'm seeing this. I had no idea the organizer what was going to be in it or what's going to happen. And honestly, I've read through a briefing and maybe I don't understand it fully, but some of the punishments seem to be extremely strict, and some of the restrictions seem to be very open-ended. I was advised that if I did decide to host the event, I better cover my back, I better take pictures, and I better be... they were going to be looking for anything in order to try to challenge my future. So, thank you for your time.
I would just like to make it clear that I communicated to you clearly that your race will be good to go this weekend.
I was told him that his event was good to go.
My name is Jordan Ricks. I'm Justin Ricks' brother and his business partner. And I was present in that meeting as well. And the term allowed to host the event is being defined very, very loosely. And we did not feel at that time that the town would have would support us in hosting the event. We thought to ourselves yesterday when we made the very, very difficult decision that if we host this event and there's a problem, it could jeopardize all other events that we host in town. So we decided, under the circumstances, under the threat that we experienced, that it would be best to cancel these two events to preserve these races in the future, not just these two events, but the other 7 events that we host in town.
Warning to the county council, Brendan Cameron, run the city marketing town, also the Moab Chamber of Commerce president. I think it's been pretty eloquently spoken from Colin, also from the event organizers, what the decision that's been made. Will do to our town fiscally. Also, Colin talked about what would happen to each individual associate, which I've got 130 of. I've got thousands of dollars of inventory in my back room, perishable inventory, that were supposed to go for these events, which I will be needing that. It's already been spoken, so I think the biggest thing, our ask would be to reconsider, to change this executive order the way it states, to allow and help. I know that it was spoken from Curtis, but we need to let folks know we are open, and this is the lifeblood. We can be cautious without threatening and without changing the lifeblood of our community. So I would ask this council to change this executive order to make it in line with what the rest of the state and country is doing, and to allow these events to take place without them feeling threatened, and to allow me to continue to pay my associates, and so that they can continue to take care of their families in this county. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Griffith, St. Clair Events. I just wanted to bring a little clarity to the recent cancellation of one of our Little California events, St. Clair Festival. expected to be over this weekend. And I'd like to start by saying we have incredible respect and admiration for the Moab Regional Hospital staff, the local Southeast Health Department office, Grand County's first responders. And in general, for anyone in Moab right now who's due to walk to action of typing online, everyone is panicking with the verbal commitment of continuity of health. For a small town in rural area with limited resources, full of heart and bread, and we simply love that about Moab. On March 6th, we received an email along with all event planners in Moab with the subject line Grand County Preparedness Plan Questionnaire, asking all event organizers to submit their answers to the attached form by March 12th, 2 days before our event. On March 9th, we received another email that was just sent to the director of Magner's events and skiing tires, stating that it's mandatory we ask participants to not attend if they are ill, and requesting we send a message to participants from California, Washington, and Oregon that they do not attend the event. The end of the message stated the county council will be meeting to determine the potential risk, and it is possible that our event could be canceled. Monday evening, we received a phone call and sharing some insights from the meeting, providing some information. It sounds like our event most likely would be allowed to proceed, but there would be more stipulations and be provided to us by the county administrator the next morning with detailed rules that we must comply with. So we understand there was a good faith attempt at getting them written and sent to us. As of Tuesday morning, we have seen anything. We made the best decision we could with the information we had, and decided instead of waiting for continued mixed messaging from three different sources and further risk of our participants' ability to recoup losses, we canceled our event and notified participants. An event needs to have specific cancellation policy. Insurance wise, to be able to recoup any losses from a canceled event, that policy needs to be purchased 2 weeks prior to an event. And currently, our that information that we had to work with was only 7 days prior to our event, so that is not going to apply to us. We support the efforts of Moab and everyone involved for coming up with plans to mitigate COVID-19 virus in Moab. We understand our local healthcare providers do not have facilities, staff, resources to handle many of the cases of the virus in Moab. We truly understand all decisions and actions are being made with the health of our community in mind and with an eye on our local economy. We really do. And we wish more people believe that too.
Mark, will you send me the request for additional stipulations? I only put out one request.
I might be the request for additional stipulations. Okay. I think it's a verbal request. Great. Jeff Logan, I'm also a Clean Car event, and Mark, I thought did a beautiful job of expressing our opinion, so I won't repeat much more of that, but I will repeat one thing that. We are members of the community, obviously, just like Justin, we give back, and we make it our value to give back. And that being said, we also believe this is something important to do. We believe it's important to continue it now, or to slow down the growth now in our community, and we appreciate being in a very difficult position. Thank you.
Doug McElveen. I'm representing the Red Rock 4-Wheeler Future Safari. The Future Safari is more than the trail. We do the vendor escort out of the arena. We also do the Walk Appreciation Day, which would be the Tuesday before. And we do a party for the 300 helpers that come. What we will do is the Jeep Safari, as we used to know it, will still happen because we don't have public meetings. Everybody's in their Jeep. They don't get together. we're not being delivered. The vendor center, we will cancel.
No.
If the dinner, we will cancel. Well, the appreciation day, we will cancel, but the beach safari will still as well.
My name is Joe Downer, local citizen here in Malawi, Utah. Staff, health department, you guys definitely do a wonderful job. I'd like to thank you for your effort and stuff, but I'd hate being your shoes for sure. Because you've got to make smart decisions. So is this voted on or is not? Not passed, is this up in the end? Get done deal? Or are we going to go to a vote?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I definitely like to voice my opinion that, yeah, just be voted down for sure. And, you know, one thing that I thought when I was sitting here, we're all born in the United States. We're citizens. We have a choice to come here, be exposed over and over and over. I heard people coughing over that. I'm like freaking out. But we made the choice to come here. You know, we're going to make a choice. Either show up someplace or not show up someplace. That's our right as an American citizen. So if people want to come and run on the river road, no matter if anybody organizes it, it's their right to come and run on the river road. In my opinion, for sure. But I do understand that the guests are trying to control. But you got no control. Period. You have zero control of it. You know, we're all born here on Earth, we're all going to die here on Earth. We can, you know, you can't debate that. This is a matter of how you're going to do it. Thank you.
Hello, this is Josh Green. Representing the Comfort Sleep Law and the Arches, that's actually your name, and the Horn Management Group. I'm a little bit disappointed to hear that we're closing the vendor, giving us for the Sleep Safari, just like that. I'll touch on that again. So, just this week, I've lost 27 rooms in less than 24 hours. With roughly a 94-room hotel, that 27 of my rooms have just disappeared. Yesterday, as a lot of us in the hotel industry say, was go day. That's where we bring on our two breakfast hands. That's where we bring in extra maintenance hands. Everybody goes back to full time on their shift. That all started yesterday. Well, with the great season that we had ahead of us, we're projecting ahead, our numbers were up, we're pacing ahead and all that. I was able to get my entire staff a living wage in this town for the most part. And all that stuff just got jeopardized because of this announcement that happened this week. With what's going on is it feels like, you know, to kind of better describe it, if there's a fire in the house and don't set the house on fire, get rid of the fire. Yeah. That's what this whole thing feels like, is that we're overreacting on something. I would urge you guys to vote this down because people are counting on this. Out in the hallway, there are vendors that supply my hotel. There's my assistant general manager out there who has a daughter who is sick. And if we don't have people coming to this town, this industry that we move towards, we got rid of extraction, we got rid of minerals, we got rid of all that stuff because tourism was the way to go. Doesn't look like that's the case anymore, does it? So why are we throwing a gas on a fire that's going to limit our entire economy? Everybody in this town depends on these tourists to come here. We should depend on other things, but we removed the tourism. And, you know, we've got to really think this through. We need to come out, because the damage has been done. We need to come back on around to this and try to fix this as best we can. We're going to have a really bad season. People are going to lose their jobs. People are going to lose their houses, their cars, their medical. All that stuff is going to be going away because of this decision that was made this week. Now, just with the vendors event going on, I have 47 rooms for 7 days that are attached to that event that I'm going to have to go back and cancel right now. I have full staff lined out. I have people that have gone out and bought cars, that have moved into homes, have done all sorts of things like that to better their lives, and that's going to be taken away from them because of this right here. And at the end of the day, and this is going to probably sound awful, and I apologize, but this feels more like controlling tourism and not controlling a disease or a virus that's out there. That's what this entire thing feels like. Thank you.
Carol. My name is Sandra Wolf. I'm a small business owner here in town. I would like to start with my gratitude of living in a community that actually takes time to discuss the issue that is not just happening here in the States or in this country, but actually worldwide. And I do think that there have definitely been mistakes made in the media, and it's incredibly helpful to have heard this morning from our health department and from our hospital about the reality here in town. And I am grateful for the opportunity to be able to discuss it. The question is whether this is kind of in the middle. So on one hand, we're trying to restrict certain things, and on the other hand, we're allowing mass gatherings in churches or other places where it feels that it's more controlled. So that doesn't mean any intense to me at all. Self-quarantine was brought up, common sense, I guess, is what that maybe also has to do with. The major issue right now really is fear of people losing their jobs, of people losing their businesses. Cannot we make any promises that maybe the communities and or the council can go up to the state and say that we will need financial support, so that by the time property taxes come around again and we just don't have our coffers full and we're not able to pay the property taxes, that who's going to help us then? I am grateful that we're taking this health issue seriously, because we really don't know what is going to happen, and we did also, and we only have so many pieces of equipment that can help the elderly or the asthmatics or whoever is possibly in danger. Yes, we need to address that. But doing it half-heartedly is not necessarily going to help. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You guys know me, I'm Dan Mick. This is worse than popping in church, I gotta tell you. It's raining outside, sky's not falling. You guys are trying to do something, I understand, but you're not using common sense. You're going overboard, you're trying to shut the whole town down. You want to put a sign on the bridge, go away. That's ridiculous. You are hurting people's incomes. You're hurting people's livelihoods. We were hired to go out and help participate with the race. We lost money right there. And we're not going to get it back. You're not going to pay me for that, are you? I don't think so. You know, we all use common sense of what we do every day. We get up and wash our hands and blow our nose, whatever. If you don't feel good, we stay home. That's the only thing that needs to be done. You do not need to pass this resolution. You do not need to govern what people do in their lives to this extent. There are plenty of people out there that help for us if we need it. We don't need you to shut down. You have cost this community thousands and thousands of dollars just in the past 2 or 3 weeks coming up. This is ridiculous. You guys need to think about the impact, the big ones that are going to happen here. Who pays your money that you're at here? Who takes care of you? You know, there's people going to vote at the end of this next election. I don't think all you're going to get back in. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I'd like to echo some of the things other people have said about losing their ability to provide for the people that work for them. Cohen was a very good speaker. I can't add anything to what you said other than the fact that you guys need to facilitate more than I do. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Bob Frazier. I'm a business owner here in town. I'm for sure about 15 minutes. I appreciate planning. I appreciate paying attention. But these actions are completely unwarranted based on the numbers. I can quickly Google from the CDC. There's approximately 1,000 cases in the United States right now. Now, out of that 1,000, which ones are healed? How many die? 3% mortality rate on 329,500,000 people. That's 0.0003%.
60% of the population of the U.S. covered. We are going completely overboard with any action at this point other than preparation and planning. I'm hurting people's lives. I'm not the hero.
And there's a business owner in mostly the car show that's about to happen or should happen at the end of April. One of the sad things about it is it brings the public of Meloran to the park because all of our 60 to 80-year-old people bring their old cars down. So unlike the safari and the bicycle races and all, we're actually going to bring 500 or so people, maybe 1,000 because it's 2 each one, to the park. My big concern is, right now I'm about to pony up $6,000 just for the permit for the police to come down and take care of our event, and I need to know with some certainty that I'm willing to do that. We've got people registering on and on and on, so I don't think we can buy hand sanitizer for the probably 5,000 to 10,000 people who go through our park during that event. Now, I'd just like to get back to, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that those 5,000 to 10,000 people are going to be in Moab. They're going to be here this weekend. We run nightly rentals. They're coming anyway. And they could be bringing the coronavirus. There you go. So they're going to go. Now, our question, are we going to shut down through Martha? Because that's probably where the most people are going to go that are going to gather, that are going to be susceptible to this virus. Where does it end where I'm at? What is the practicality of saying, we can actually do something about this? Now, I understand there was, you know, a flu in whatever it was, 1918, a totally different situation, with totally different circumstance with medical staff. I don't think we're there, so let's not use that as an example. It's not real. This is a different situation, and I just believe that if you guys pass this, and we keep going down this road, it's not thousands. It's not a few jobs. You're talking tens of millions of dollars that are going to go out of their community because of this. So think about it, be practical, and figure out if you're going to have to shut down City Market.
Who's that cell phone turned off?
I'm John Bob here for the fire show. I'm a little nervous about talking in this mic with all these other people, but thanks, Dan, for bringing the toilet paper. I want to reiterate what Dave was doing a little bit, in that we're wanting to comply with everything there is to be complied with, but we certainly need to know what that involves. And our event very much caters to the over 60. Our event has a lot of ill people in it with cancer treatments and all sorts of things. I mean, it's been said that the Saturday of the car show is the most profitable day, single day, in all of Moab. So what your actions here, we're outside that 30-day period. I mean, what are the odds are you going to renew it after 30 days, which will affect us? Thank you.
I know some of you in this room, in a lot of your cases in the community, everybody should start off with that. So we're going to start taking away this, is what I'm hearing, I'm sure it's going to pass, this is how it goes. What happens next? Do you set City Market? Are we going to shut down Main Street? What's going to happen? Eventually, it's just going to make this place a ghost town. It's going to boom again. There's a lot of fear. I can't even find a house. That's something that's kind of concerning, I think. I'm very nervous, mainly because I know there's a lot of pressure in that hallway. And I know there's a lot of them that are going to back everything that's going to happen, and some of them aren't going to like it, that's what's going to happen. But I think we're a little bit on the overreaction side of things. The damage is done. We already told people we're in an emergency meeting that we're currently holding. People already saw that. They already heard it. So, just think about your next action. Thank you.
My name is
Jennifer
Lee. I just have a few comments. I'm in a small business owner. I have a small marketing business.
and I appreciate the difficult position. I have already lost some sensations, not because of the executive order, but what's happening more broadly. I think someone said that New York is canceling events for this executive order, and it seems like we were trying to do something that it's hard to know what's going to happen. Nobody knows what's going to happen. I think as soon as there's a third coronavirus case in Grand County, that's going to affect people are nervous. So I applaud you for attempting to do something. I think it's a difficult situation. I think it's certainly possible if the executive order didn't pass in November, there could be another meeting and people claim we didn't do enough. So it's a fun balance. I think good luck.
Hi, my name is Bernie Palmer. I'm also a small business owner in this town. And I also appreciate the need to sort of get things lined up before there's a problem. However, I do not feel that banning gatherings or events are really going to change the outcome of the number of cases that we see here. That, to me, isn't the wisest choice. The wisest choice would be the alternative actions that would actually prevent the virus from spreading in things like providing hand sanitizer around town for putting little things on the street, on the corners, to use hand sanitizer. I understand that there's a limited number of masks, hopefully our country can make up for that lack of important items in production, so maybe we should also prepare those if it's available. A lot of people, myself included, think that the largest point of contact for getting the virus is actually to the market. It's where everyone goes, no matter who you are, you're going to go to the market. So places like that can do more action for cleaning, providing more hand sanitizer. They already do that, but they could do more. Other places around town can do the same action. And I don't think that limiting events will help anyone. I've also already received cancellations and I just want to reiterate that canceling events is going to do that to the magic and the virus spreading from the local.
My name is Jeff Edwards, and I'm here in Tiger, and we'll have them in the meeting. I have a family that lives in my town, comprised of 80-year-old parents, 12-year-old daughters. I understand the position that you're in. Fortunately, what I don't understand is there's no travel restrictions in the United States. There's none. So in order to ban an event, in essence, you're creating a travel restriction. You're banning tourism. A mass gathering is the same thing as promoting the Mighty Five. We're promoting people to come here, to mass gather. We remove an event, how are we going to control people coming? That's why we have events. If they're going to come, are they going to be organized? Are we going to be prepared? If they come, is the medical staff still going to be prepared? Are they going to be on that heightened alert that they're going to be as if there's an organization that's having an event now? Is that same kind of readiness going to happen? I understand you're in a very, very tight predicament here. I ask, please don't go by way of the mass panic of toilet paper, of can't buy this, can't buy that, because people are pushing that panic button. I urge you, stop, think, invoke common sense, not a reaction.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Alex. I'm from Giant. I'm a member of the community since 5 years, but I'm European origin, so I'm following very close the news from Spain, from Poland, as well as other investors, as you know. So, the cases like that, we have a difficult situation over there, and I don't want to repeat the opinions of other people and what they're feeling. And, So really the coronavirus is not directly affecting in Europe, it's indirectly what's affecting the life of the people, what the people, the local communities concerned here anymore. So the only, my question is, what the mitigation measures of the local government you plan to do to help those families? Because as far as I know, the local government in Spain, for example, they release the tax payments, for example, for this period. The regional government, they negotiated with the banks to postpone mortgage payment or any loan because people, they have no money. So my simple question to that, if you as our representative here in MOA, if you are planning some mitigation to help local communities financially. Thank you.
From the beginning, this has been clear. This is a big fear issue. Most of what we see going on out there is fear. This is all about fear. I'm going to try to think of all the ways I can use the word fear, but that's what this is mostly about. I couldn't help but think about back in the 40s when the Supreme Court made a decision which has since been universally thought of as one of the worst decisions they've ever made. And it was based out of fear. They made a decision. There was a hysteria going on in the country. And they passed, there were laws passed that the Supreme Court supported. The passing of laws that said we're going to imprison all American citizens of Japanese descent. Because they thought a few people might bring some trouble to the country. The Supreme Court actually approved that. Now we know that this incredible fear going on. That's what's going on here, that same kind of fear. Now, it may not be out of fear, which concerns me the most. It may actually be a boondoggle again for those who want to slow down tourism. You know there are people here whose desire and effort are to slow down tourism. So the question I have is this being done out of an effort to slow down tourism? Or is it being done out of fear? Fear is a liar. Fear is a liar. So I would ask of you, when you make your vote, and I know that the word spoken here, act as if this has been done, which is very disappointing. But yes, there is a vote. And I would ask of you, when you make your vote, just be transparent, be honest. Are you making this decision because you're afraid, or are you making this decision so that you can stop tourism? Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Christine Dennis. I'm a small business owner. My place is called the Cafe Italiana, right in the central city of Milan. So, since the virus showed up, since that day, I'm just working really closely what's going on because we are living in the highly demanded tourism area. So, I knew that these days were coming and we were discussing this. However, what I would like to there's a big fear outside, and you read the articles on the internet or any other facts. I see that the fear is controlling us right now. It should not be that way. We have to control the actual disease. This is what I'm wondering. My question will be is, did we take all the prevention before the virus comes here? Yes, I know that we are just discussing this. However, as I knew this chamber is protecting the citizens and the business owners, right? So what is the next step actually? The gentleman already asking the taxes and then the finance situation of all this disease. because you still going to cancel all the events so far. I don't know what's going on in the next step, because what is the maybe one of the biggest getting the revenue from the prison. So what I would like to ask you, just a little scenario. If you're going to cancel all these events and then you're protecting the adults of your city, obviously there are many people that are coming here from other states, and then they're having also their customers from international, from Las Vegas, from Denver. So what I would like to know is, how are we going to control it, and then what is your really prevention and then the finance support for the business owners? Thank you.
Hello, Zach Blaine with my name. I just had a question on 4D on your definitions for mass gathering. I read a draft yesterday and it included restaurants, and this copy that I received in the hallway does not. So it just seems very unfair to me to be picking and choosing which industries qualify for mass gathering or not. Hotels have records so we can have 100 people in a breakfast room at a time. A restaurant just doesn't in town with over 100 people. So in fact, if you look at that before you vote, and I do share lots of business before, but it was all the wrong focus. Thank you.
Is there any correction that you can give it? So before you vote, I know that probably going into this meeting, most of you were on board with hearing this, but consider that if you don't vote for them, you vote it down. It doesn't mean you can't do anything. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do anything. It just means that this overreaction, which I know everybody's heart is probably in the right place, you don't want to see a problem, a potential problem, it's coming to Moab either way. Coronavirus is going to come to Moab, whether you have this or not. There's probably no way that it's not going to impact any place that has this much tourism, this many people, it's coming to some degree. But this reaction is going to cost millions of dollars, tons of jobs, really negatively impact the town that's still going to have to deal with coronavirus. You've got two schools that are in three districts, City Market, Village Market, Moonflower, you know, churches. You are not going to control the situation this way. Instead of taking this action, you know, what about reaching out to other communities that have more wash stations for events that aren't using them? Bring those in. Put some of those on Main Street and places and get everybody who's coming to town, instead of thinking we're shutting Moab down, how about Moab doing everything it can and making it really safe to come here while this virus is happening in this country? We could take the opposite approach. Instead of sending out a message that you shouldn't come, send out a message that this is one of the safest places to come to, because we are really taking serious the things that you can do to mitigate the spread of it. Because we're not going to stop it, and this will not stop it. This is going to cream this economy, jobs, people's livelihoods, and this is a bad action. If you vote this down, it doesn't mean you can't do something. Take a breath, take some time and think about it. Right now, we have no places in town. You know, they're going to come, but you've got time to take a slower, more thoughtful, intelligent reaction to this than doing this. I understand that everyone's trying to stop a big problem before it happens, but this virus is coming. Let's take a charge of this to where if you're going to travel somewhere, go to Moab. They have wash stations everywhere. They have hand sanitizing. They're taking this seriously. This is the safest place to come to. Plus, you know, instead of going to a huge city, going to Manhattan while this is happening, hell of a lot better to come to Moab, go out in the desert, where, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm when I'm like it, I'm not getting sick. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Daniel Wright, and I have a few comments that I'd like to make. The first is, I could barely hear Jan earlier, but from what it sounded like, the hospital is pretty unprepared. So I want to know, how is it that Moab is a town that conservatively been
in the business of hosting large gatherings for 20 years, conservatively 20 years, and yet we have 6 beds to deal with something like this. And why is that falling on the back of small businesses and people who live here and work here, and not falling on the city and the hospital? Why can't they bring things here to make that situation better? It seems like contacting all the event organizers, with surgeon, elderly, confirmed people with existing conditions, would make much more sense than a blanket executive order affecting everybody who lives at risk and works here. Why not focus our attention on the demographic that would be at risk? The city and the county could provide more hand washing stations, funds for temporary tents or something to deal with sick people if they can. Isn't that the job of the health industry here? Why can't the council figure out a way to have this sort of event in a larger venue where we can halt at all these foods? We could all be heard. We could all hear you. That seems like a far smaller problem to deal with than the coronavirus. And yet we couldn't even count on you for that.
Yeah.
Do we as Americans have a right to assemble? Do we have a right to go where we want to go, be where we want to be? How is it that this council, when they can't even figure out how to hold a meeting, is going to put themselves before our constitutional right of being able to go where we want to go and do what we want to do? What measures are you taking to preserve the wages and the income of the people that are going to be affected by them? Listening to everybody who spoke already, it's obvious the economic impact is already there. It's already come. It's costing people money already. But the virus isn't here. So why do you want to focus on something that's not here instead of focus on the thing that is here? Somebody made the point about the market. I wish the doctor was here, because I guarantee he would have to agree that it's far more likely that that's going to end up in the market and the school and places like that than it will be at Instacart or an event where people take into consideration things like that.
Good morning. First of all, I'm taking off my study committee chair hat. I'm not speaking on behalf of anything related to that, but being a private citizen running the meeting. One thing that has happened this morning, we've heard from a lot of business owners. I'm also a business owner, but I also like to believe I'm 30 now, that I'm still a young person. And one of the impacts that we're going to have resoundingly throughout the community is going to be an impact on young people jobs. 20-year-olds to 30-year-olds that come here, just love living lives. If they have to live out of a van, they'll live out of a van. And they want to enjoy this unique community we have. And their lifeblood is past tourism. We're seeing cancellations, we're hearing cancellations, and what that's going to do is it's not going to allow those people to remain in the community. And what I want to do is potentially landlords will call me up and hire me if you're independent and not paying. And that's a fear and a struggle that we should be concerned about, because shutting this down may increase the amount of coronaviruses, but it also is going to impact the financial pocketbooks of people that live here so that they no longer can live here. That's one part of what I'd like to say. The second part is this. We need to make sure that whatever message we're sending is a clear, concise message. What we've had throughout all the people that we've talked, they've had miscommunications with the county. Be it one side or another, we've heard both sides come away from the same exact conversation with two very different understandings. So the thing that I would plead with you folks is to be concise, be clear as to what exactly happened. It is a 30-day bus deadline, has to be a 30-day bus deadline, we'll revisit it. But we really truly need conciseness and focus on the people that can't be here to talk with the other groups. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Roy Ari. I'm a long time native here. I just moved back about 3.5 years ago. I've been spending the last 2.5 years busting my butt to make my business work, going through slow times. Crooked business partners, you name it, I've accomplished it. Now I'm going to watch my business die in the next month because of this. And I would really like if you think this out. I understand the concern. I completely understand it, but mitigate it. Like I said, I am really frustrated to hear the church is still allowing you to gather. But we're worried about little offense mountain bike racers of people that are in insanely good health. That doesn't make any sense. I understand it's Utah and church above law, but let's be realistic here.
Yes, my name is Richard, and my wife and I have just lived here a couple of years. We've been close to that career now. We've come to Moab all our life, well, all of our adult married life, and enjoy it here. But I just say to you, use a lot. I work for a pipeline construction company, and I use math a lot. You cannot fight or win math. Math is a constant. Before I give you the statistics, that I don't understand why there's such a knee-jerk reaction at this point. My concern with your knee-jerk reaction is this. How do you read this? So it's very concerning. So let me give you the statistics. Now, these statistics aren't a year old. This is the 5 months, the last 5 months of the flu season. 34 million to 49 million Americans have had some type of flu in the last 5 months. That's over a tenth of the population. Out of that, medical visits reached 23 million. Now, this is CDC. You know, we all can Google, even an old man like me. 350 to 620,000 people were hospitalized. 20 to 52,000 people died in the last 5 months from the flu. Look at where we are today. 8 weeks ago, we talked about coronavirus. We finally got a few cases here in America. 90% of the cases are at one rest home in Washington. And I can't imagine how this justifies this knee-jerk reaction you have. If you're going to have this meeting, you should give us time. Give us a couple weeks. Let everybody talk. Let everybody meet and make a decision. But for you to make knee-jerk decisions over something like this, when this mass is constant, the death from the flu, why didn't you have this meeting last year, the year before that, and the swine flu, the big one in 09? Did you have those meetings then to talk about all this? Yeah, here we are in the coronavirus, 8 weeks into it. This morning they've got 23 vaccines in the works right now that are going to start going through the test stages. You know, when I was a kid, we called it propaganda. That's what Russia did to control the people.
I'll just say this, that we
need to be thinking common sense here. Knee-jerk reactions aren't going to be the way to mitigate this in any way. Thank you.
Our county attorney needs to leave, and she has wants to address a couple issues, and so I'm going to let her talk first, and then we'll go back to public comment.
It's a little bit long, but I do have a 11 o'clock meeting with the court, with our jail, with our sheriff's office to talk about. Yeah. There's been a couple comments. I know a council member asked some questions about the enforcement piece. I'd like to emphasize that this is section 3 of the proposed order. This is taken right out of the Disaster Response and Recovery Act and the Disaster Health Code, both of which are cross-referenced in the criminal code. So all of the misdemeanor language and the civil penalties can be cleared out of those sections of law. Law does require first for law enforcement to provide a notice of consent to an individual who's not complying. And this provides a clear and concise way to notify someone in person if they're being non-compliant. Our first draft didn't include the section 3, and it was requested by our sheriff's office. And it is an important component of that to be answered and enforced. I'll just want to say, I came into this, we have put hundreds of hours of county resource, in addition to other entities that have been involved, and we've been closely working with the health department, and the MRA, the county government, the governor's task force. And I come around, I started this process in the experiment as well, and I've really come around to evidence and the science, and the important piece is flattening the curve, not stopping it, but flattening the curve. So with that, I do need to go, but I want to ask if any of you guys have questions on the enforcement.
Do you have any questions? I mean, if it were up to me, I would have left it. With that first paragraph that this is fully enforceable by the sheriff's office, Molasses Police, and the Health Department. Because adding the rest of the language that outlines all of the punishments just seems pretty heavy handed, and not say the word threatening. However, having said that, I'm not prepared to make that something that I would vote or not vote for this particular order. So thank you for explaining that. So is it not so enforceable when you just have the first paragraph? Do we have to have all the rest?
Well, I've got to express that it's been very difficult to do it here, but I haven't thought of the fact it's But sure, there are unfortunate measures. And there's also, general nuisance law, those in law enforcement. There's numerous additional general criminal code provisions that would allow us to enforce it, but the reason the penalties are stiff under law is because it's a big deal. So that's what you guys have to decide. Whether it's a good enough deal to invoke the health code provision and the public safety
provision. Yeah. Anyone else have questions about training with the PSU? Thank you for the PSU.
Okay, we'll go back to public comment. Thank you. Yeah, what you got? I'm under the timing, so I've got 2 minutes on each one. From now on, I'll tell you when there's 10 seconds left, because I'm kind of wrapped up. Yeah. Need more time than you have to deal with her. I don't have that extra power. So. All right. My name is Justin Fazenda. I'm the owner of Moab Banyan. I guess my question, or what I would like to hear maybe from the health officials since they got cut off, is this order the best way to flatten the curve? We're allowing mass gatherings of high density of community people, but tourism that come in for 2 days and leave aren't going to overwhelm our healthcare facilities. The citizens of our community, you're allowing gatherings of the community, but not of tourists. Is that the best way? Flatten the curve. They were interrupted by Chris when I tried to answer that question. So that's what I want to hear and would like to know. And if we do vote yes on this, as everybody else said, I will have to lay off people. I've lost tens of thousands of dollars to pay my staff through the winter, and now it's time to go. And if it doesn't happen, I can't continue on that. So I would just like you to consider if this order is the best way to flatten the curve. I'm all for prevention and flattening the curve, but this seems like an attack on tourism. So, thank you. Can we respond to that? I appreciate everybody's comments. I know most of you. The actual best way to flatten the curve would be to cancel it. We're trying to compromise. We're trying to come up with an avenue to work with our community, to work with our business owners. We're doing our best. We're human too. We live in a community. My wife's a teacher at the school. I'm concerned about that. She's, you know, she's exposed to all this too. But this was an effort for us to try to come up with the best compromise that all of the subject matter experts in our community were collaborating together to try to mitigate coronavirus and the economic impact that it could have, as well as the economic impact of these decisions that are being made.
But my question is, would it be better to cancel school than to cancel school?
One of the factors
right now is that the disease is manifesting itself as strongly in young people, and our church is. Orion did give one off to cancel everything. That does flatten the curve significantly. But mentioned earlier, there is not an easy answer. That came into play that we had all of these discussions. But even with, as we talk about closing schools, when we have those discussions, what do parents do that are working and can't work in that state? So, every single one of these things we can't afford them. I understand. I'm just saying that from a public health standpoint, we really strive not to be blind decision makers.
My name is Jeremy Day. I run a hotel in Holiday Inn Express in Montreal. I'm fifth generation of my life. And not that it gives me any pride over anybody else. But the reality of it is, the coronavirus is coming. We all know that. Mitigating it is a tough situation. Period. That's the health department's job. These guys have to err on the side of caution like nobody's business. That is what they are designed to do. Now, to balance that is our local government, right? It's your guys' responsibility to lead and to mitigate not just the damage of the virus that, as we know right now, is affecting people with immune compromise and people who are elderly. That's what it's affecting. So it's your job to balance the economics and the tough position to be in when we adopt that. So my words are really clear right now. Your decision today and what you vote on will be your legacy right now. Period. You see this community? This is not a small faction of people. This is the business community. These people right here, they employ probably 80% of the community in the tourism industry that are here right now. That's huge. Okay? Huge. So, and let's look at history for just a second. SARS, Ebola, H1N1, bird flu, all of these, pandemics. What did we do? How did we read? Where are we at? Look at your history for a second. I understand that the coronavirus spread faster percentage-wise, but the truth of the matter is right now, your legacy will be defined right here today. Mark my words, because the community, the business community, is watching.
Wanda Campbell, I'm the vice president of the Chamber of Commerce and the business manager for Banking Town. I just wanted to bring out that this doesn't just affect tourism industry in this town, this affects everyone. It'll affect our deposits, it'll affect my personal job as a business manager. While I might get more applications for a line of credit, I need the cash flow to approve that. You just put that cash flow back 30 days by making this decision happen. So I just want to make sure you understand it's not just the tourism industry that's needing this to not happen. It's everyone.
thank you so much for this. Hello, I'm Tina Kirby. I'm a law native, and contrary to many of the voices, I'd like to actually compliment you on your intelligence. I appreciate that you are looking to mitigate the potential effects this virus could have on our community, but I ask that you use that same intelligence and do not pass this today until you have in place a plan to mitigate the impact it's already having on our local economy. We have a great awareness of our housing issues already present in this community. The tourism industry is allowing, as a single mother of three children, to remain able to pay my mortgage and taxes. It is also allowing me to be a financial contributing member to this society, not on welfare of any kind and not in subsidizing. And now, for instance, I grew up with a business mentor, that's where many came from. In teams with many others in this industry, and tuitions are high, and my income is falling up from underneath me. I ask, will you be paying my mortgage? My taxes? Are you going to help me feed my children? When due to this order, I'm not going to be able to anymore? Thank you.
I'm an interstate comment. I'm also a local business owner. I agree with pretty much everything that we said, but Chairman Epstein spoke. This is not off subject, but not to sit there and repeat everything they said. But if anybody self-contains themselves in their house and they feel symptoms, it is the hospital can provide in-home that 24 hours that they can go and do a test, and within 24 hours of them receiving it, they'll know whether it's positive or not. That way you can encourage people to self, what's the word, self-contain yourself.
Self-quarantine.
Yeah, so if someone self-quarantines himself, is the hospital going to go out of their way, go to their house and make sure that they're checked, make sure they have that? I think that's something that should be offered.
Thank you. So right now, I know that we have, if you came down with a cough, a shortness of breath, fever, people are wanting to know, is that the coronavirus? But for most people, they won't require hospitalization, and if you have those symptoms and are feeling lousy, but you don't need hospitalization, we encourage you to stay home, like you would with a mild case of the flu, until those symptoms resolve and your fever's been gone for 24 hours. So simply getting a cough and a fever doesn't mean I need to be out of commission for 14 days. If you've had some travel history, we encourage you to call the health department and we can discuss that. But the course of your days has been normal, you get sick, stay home until that resolves, and for most people, that will be a couple of days.
To speak more specifically to what the hospital here is doing, we've been communicating on that. The hospital has set up a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week hotline that is always manned by a nurse that can help answer those questions. There's a series of questions that been asked to help determine whether or not you are at risk for coronavirus. If symptoms are still mild, due to licensing issues, they can't send you to your home, but they will meet you in outside of the actual building to the hospital to take the sample that was going to be analyzed, then ask you to, return home. They'll never deny anybody if you have severe symptoms. If the symptoms are severe, you need to be in the hospital. They will provide care.
How much is it then?
For those people that, so there, we are restricting the test to those people that qualify, so to speak, but that is free. But don't everybody leave here and go get the test.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jill Benfordo. I have the shareholder and Franklin Beach Marriott and the general manager. I completely understand what you guys are going through. I echo everything that everyone said about business loss of staff. but I don't think anybody's yet spoken to loss of what our deaths are doing. Before I came here today, I was helping the breakfast room. I had the chance to speak to a couple from Houston, Texas. They were both over 7 years old. They had traveled here for 5 days because they wanted to escape Houston and get in check there. They wanted to be in Moab and enjoy it, and they felt that this was a safer place for them than it was in a jam-packed city. They read in the newspaper about the fact that we were canceling events. They shortened their stay. They're supposed to be 5 days. They shortened their stay to 4 days before I was here. And that's okay, that's one day. But their feedback was, we thought this was a safe place to come. And we realized that you guys are canceling events because you must have coronavirus here, and we want to leave. That's the message that you're sending. And I want to make sure that you know that, because sometimes I think that the deaths aren't spoken for. That's what they see, that's what they hear, that's what they know. I immediately told them there's no case of coronavirus here, and they're thinking, well, why did you cancel all these things? We want to get back somewhere where it's safe. And that's where they want.
Concerning their guests, we all have visitors that come here that we want to take care of. We have our community that we want to take care of. We need to deal with it in a business-like fashion. I'd like to commend the events that had to make that tough choice because they had to do it with the information that they had at the time. Give us some direction. Each individual group will make their own decisions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to answer a few of the questions that were brought up. One of the reasons we declared the disaster emergency was to enable us to apply for financial aid from the federal government and from the state so that we can start making plans on how we can help businesses and citizens in the community who are at risk, and the financial situation. We could not do that until we made that declaration. That is why the state of Utah made that declaration, because, right now we don't have that many coronavirus, but they knew that at some point they may need to be applying for federal aid. So we spoke to the Lieutenant Governor's office, and they were encouraged us to make that decision. Second, I want to address the question, is this an effort to slow down tourism? No, it's not. The coronavirus is slowing down tourism in many ways, and other towns are losing as many people cancellations as are in Laura. And Capitol Reef, they're losing like half of their people are calling daily and canceling, and they're not making any decisions. So, and I also wanted to talked about, this is not banning the events. I'm hearing over and over people are coming up and saying, we're banning events. No. That was discussed. But we wanted to do something that was more, that we could try to find some compromise. And through the discussions with the health department, said one of the best ways to slow down and flatten this virus is social distancing. To have people, the social distancing has been proven to be one of the most effective ways to flatten the growth of this virus. And so by dealing with mass gatherings is one way to work on lowering and creating more social distancing. So that's what we're addressing. And also to follow the protocol of the CDC. So those are the two things we are asking of event organizers. We are not banning events. In countries who have not made hard decisions up front before the coronavirus was present in their country are suffering greatly today. Italy is our greatest example. They were afraid to hurt their
courtesy comments, so they really think to that, they think to any precautions. And so consequently now their entire country, their is shut down, their medical systems are in crisis. I would like to try to prevent that. So that is the effort of this executive order, is to find what use the science, and what does the science tell us? Social distancing. Where do we have great numbers of people gathering? Is in masks. So let's try at this point. First step is to try to lower that risk. So those are some of the questions that I saw that were asked.
No.
So,
does this include the city limits or just the county? And here it says the unincorporated part of the county, but is this city part of the county?
The mass gathering is countywide, and the events are only for unincorporated Marion County. The city will have to decide what they want to do for their.
Thank you for clarifying.
We are here to ask them for some of our meeting. A discussion and consideration of an order imposing a temporary restriction on mass gatherings, as defined by the order of instituting additional mandatory requirements for the planning and operation of events within Gregg County to mitigate the transmission of infectious disease, Corona 19, Dora, coronavirus. And it is about it, not a
I'd like to make a motion to impose a temporary restriction on mass gatherings as defined by the order and instituting additional mandatory requirements for the planning and operation of events within Grand County to mitigate the transmission of infectious disease COVID-19 novel coronavirus.
Motion by Gabriel Boykin. Seconded by David Hawk. I'm opening for discussion. I'd like to give every council member an opportunity to discuss, and then another council member will just to add again after everybody's had their opportunity. That will be absolutely possible. So I'm opening it up for discussion. Roy.
Well, I would just like to say I echo a lot of what everybody's saying. I mean, there is a concern, and I don't think we're at that point. The last. Tourism, and also have a family that has two hotels here in town, and one donates lots of money to the community, through the school, through the hospital, and so that's all I've got to disclose.
Is anybody else?
Yeah, I will disclose. We should handle that up front. I don't like that when that's laid out for marginalized people.
I'd just like to say in the last 3 weeks we've had several buses from Asia countries actually canceling on us. Everybody knows why. we're looking at our profits this year already dropping 30% just because of the bus group that our county. I don't know how that's going to affect our county, but I know our county depends on that money coming in from our tourism. I'm really concerned about it, not only for my business, but also for the county and our citizens. I will not be voting on this today. I will vote against it.
Thank you.
Go ahead,
I'd just like to say that I feel that I have a responsibility to listen to health professionals. They have made a determination based on data, research, evidence, and science. They haven't made that determination based on fear. I feel much more comfortable following their recommendations than any sort of determination I can make via the internet. I don't believe that passivity is a prudent choice at this moment. And as the chair stated, this is not canceling events. This is not shutting the town down. I feel like there is a clear invitation for collaboration and partnership with local business to implement an order like this as a basic preventative measure to protect the long-term health of our community. And I think that that was made very clear, and I think it's important that we all work together to control the narrative that this town didn't close for business. If we're submitted through this order, if everyone is resolved that this town is closed for business, that's certainly going to have a negative overall impact on a continuing basis to the economy of the town. So I think it's important that we rally together around the idea that this is not a cancellation and that we're moving forward and we're continuing to do this.
So I would, you know, the preparation and the proactiveness from the staff and, you know, the help professionals is appreciated, and it shouldn't be a, pushback for that, sense of environment. I think really, this is personally where this has gone wrong for me, is how heavy and authoritative the legislation is. And I mean, this isn't legislation that I've collaborated on. I mean, there's internal meetings going around. I mean, really, this is the first time that this body has had the opportunity to discuss this publicly. And I think that's part of the problem, is it's not what you're doing, it's how you're doing it. And how we're doing it is causing a lot of problems. And so, my preference in a path forward is, I do think it would be a good thing to not pass this executive order today, to continue the planning, to task the travel council with reaching out to the future, events coming up, to make sure that we're welcoming their events, but that these are the CDC guidelines that we would like them to follow. And after voting down this legislation today, we can have another special meeting tomorrow, Thursday, even Friday, Monday, because this is important for the county council as a body to discuss these issues and see how we would like staff to move forward. Appreciate staff being proactive because they haven't had a chance to discuss this since the last meeting. But with all due respect, I mean, people say they don't want a county commission, but we've had one council member in a room taking these meetings. I'm seeing the county attorney respond to citizen comments like she's our PR person. That's not how this works. We are the representatives of the people. It is our responsibility to collaborate and forward legislation and adopt that legislation. So this very much is a process problem, and not that was done intentionally, but it is. The way the message is sent has been very negative, and the impact is real. And if you pass this legislation as it's stated today, it's absolutely going to send them out of the ticket. They've already been sent. And it's handsome enough. And we are close to this. And that can bring devastating impacts to the community. So I'm taking this virus seriously. I mean, the entire country is watching the readings. We do want to, as a legislator for Grand County, we do want to partner with the health professionals in the hospital. But that's through good discussion and low temperament decision making.
And this does feel very unique to us.
I will have that. You will have to leave if you're going to disrupt our discussion. Who else?
They should know that in the classroom when you're jumping down.
You've heard from me already, you know, my reservations about this. However, I don't feel like it's a knee-jerk reaction. I do respect that a lot of time and effort has gone into this. I would like to say that there are more than two choices here. That being more than two choices to make this decision. It was stated that one of those choices is here and the other one is a desire to shut down tourism. There is a third choice here. And it's the one that I would take, pragmatism after a rational assessment of the situation and doing the best that we can to mitigate, flatten the curve, so to speak. I would hope that on this task force committee that there would be one single person tasked with being an advocate for event organizers. It feels to me like event organizers have not felt supported, have not felt like partners, and that advocate would help the event organizers do everything in their power to comply with the CDC regulations. So that we know that everything possible has been done to make sure that event takes place. I have followed this since late January very, very closely every single day. And of course, there's lots of information out on the internet, podcasts. I will say that one source compared to soup, down and flu, it's been a question of mine, why is everybody panicking? It seems like we have way more people dying of the flu. You know, what about the Spanish? Somebody brought up Spanish flu back in 1918. It may have been a different picture with Spanish flu if they had had the capacity back in 1918 to put people in respirators. We have a capacity today, and people are still dying, a high risk group. So I do feel it's important to go ahead and take steps to mitigate flatten the curve. And my final remarks will be something that I send out to probably several hundred people in town who mostly are within my constituency, but other people have requested to be on that list. So it includes people throughout the county. And I sent this to these people by email yesterday. Some comments, very short, by Justin Lessler, who is an associate professor of epidemiology at Johns Hopkins. He starts with the question, will most 50-man species be affected by the new coronavirus? And he goes on to answer, it is likely that eventually it will become endemic and most of us will get infected. But one question is super important. How long will it take for that to happen? If it happens in a few months, every hospital will be overwhelmed and people will not be treated for coronavirus or other diseases. If it happens that fast, it will be an unprecedented disaster. However, if we do our best in terms of prevention by practicing social distancing, reducing travel, not going to work when we're sick, we could slow the spread of the disease. If the same 60-70% infection of the global population is spread over 3 years, then hospitals don't get overwhelmed, people can get treated, and we have time to develop vaccines. It's a completely different story.
The difference between operating fast or slow is potentially the difference between the 19 flu level event and the bad flu season level event. We have control over that. Those are not my words. They're the words of the health professional. And I concur, and it's actually brought me around to realizing why it's important that we do.
I don't have any business interest in it. I do have a medical background. I was a medic in the Army. I was a nurse. Treated a lot of soldiers. I'm aware of the problems with virus. I've been following what's been going on with this new particular virus that's popped up. It's interesting to find out where it came from, fast, where it was according to the investigators. And trying to figure out the best way to handle it. A couple of years ago, I had flu going around, and I was afraid to go to sleep at night because I was quick to sleep. And that was the flu that was here. I'm in the age bracket that they're talking about. I'll be 70 years old, okay? So, I'm not taking this lightly. However, we've been hearing from a lot of people that have been impacted already without the virus even being here. And for them, this is devastating. So at this point, I don't feel like I can support the vaccine. So that's where I'm
at. A painful question. Okay, as the chairman or head of the cartel, the most impacting event in this spring, we're going to be in Moab City. Effectively, this doesn't do anything to us. Our permits, everything is through Moab City.
So that's gathering how
it works. Anyone. Okay.
But the other decision,
specifically, I'll need to talk to you about what we're going to do, because we put on an event with typhoid Mary. What happens?
You know, what I was looking like, I just wanted to see this also. Sorry, I've been through a lot in the last decade, many, many potential diseases, and this is by far the hardest thing I've ever dealt with. And this is truly a no-win situation. I've been with many counties for decades. And what the financial implications are for all of you are the same for this organization. You see one of my friends and my family. And I don't know what I'm going to do if I can't continue and keep them on. The reason why we are taking this action is because I have very clearly communicated with the health department and the hospital and the airplane that we cannot respond to this. We are going to end up in a position where people are going to die unnecessarily because we do not have the healthcare capacity to deal with it. And so, I said it that I looked all the way all around the world and why, you know, we're just literally shutting the whole country together. it would be because of ABI. The reality is, and for some reason, in the early, they're in triage. They don't have the resources to treat everybody, so they're taking the ones that they think have the best chance of survival and pulling their resources around them. There are very extreme things happening all around the world. I'm doing my best to try to save people's lives. And I just want you to know that I am worried sick about this economy. I am worried sick about people dying that I know about. And this is a terrible stress on me. I just beg you all to take this seriously. And I'm begging you to observe social distancing. Whatever happens, I'm begging you to do what you can to slow this down. Because our healthcare system does not have the capacity to deal with a large outbreak in Graham County. And I know that's hard to believe, but the nature of exponential growth, which is how viruses move through populations, is not intuitively understandable. It's no big deal, and then all of a sudden we're overwhelmed. And that's happening all over the world. So please do what you can to help slow this down, no matter what happens tonight, no matter what the government does or doesn't do. Please help. I'm there.
Thank you. Many people have spent the last few days working very hard to try to come up with a solution that would do the best. I mean, trying to protect our economy. Like Chris said, if our community, if our CRC caps, if those things go down, the devastation on our city, they're going to have the same out that our businesses do. We are already looking at who we're going to have to lay off, what services are we able to cut without hurting the health and welfare of our community. What's happening to the local businesses is also happening to your government. And the only thing we can do, I strongly believe, and it is not an easy decision, it's a tough decision, is to enact an ordinance that will slow down and help people not have to increase the social distances and the CDC. This ordinance does that. It doesn't. That yesterday at the travel council meeting I was at it, we're already talking about ways we can get it out on social media and in the news. That well, that's a great place to come because most of our activity involves social distancing. If you're running the bus, you're on social, we're attempting, they're already putting together the love that is worked with our travel council is already reorganizing and redoing their advertisements to put that message out. The reason this was the people that run the event want some clarity. They want to know what we are expecting and asking of them. We're not asking them to not come. We're asking them to do everything in their power to lower the social interaction of people in large crowds. So, I agree with Chris. I had sleepless nights with me. But I said my entire family. But in fact, my county, my city, and it's going to affect our state. And it already did. It's already affecting our nation, our state. Only thing we can do is be proactive. But later on, people will be looking at us and say, why in the hell didn't you do something? Why did you let it get to this point? We're already getting that from people. I'm getting 6 and 7 emails a day that is saying the exact opposite of what I heard here today.
Why
aren't they here? Well, people don't come when they like what's happening.
I understand your goal, but tell me what I'm wrong here. Unless you're all people in the field, close the schools, close the churches, close the visitor centers in the National Park, you are not stopping mass gatherings by this. You're cherry-picking. The end of the restaurant, you're cherry-picking this industry, and you're impacting the law. So how is that really stopping mass gatherings?
That could happen, right? That could happen.
Thank you. Not you.
Over.